Steve Sir joins us. Steve, how are you, my man?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Hey, I appreciate it. Ross Shep?
Yes, Ross Shep.
Ross Shep, okay. So you actually did. Now, did you win a high school title when you were at Ross Shep?
We did. We won provincials my 10th and 11th grade year, and then I moved away with my family to St. Paul, Minnesota, and they still won provincials the next year. So.
Oh, so three in a row.
Yeah, we had a really tough team, really really tough team.
So when you went to grade 12 in St. Paul, Minnesota, so you obviously went to played high school basketball there.
Yep.
How was it equivalent wise to what you were playing at Ross Shep?
I'd say that our team at Shep had more individual talent than our team at Creighton-Durham Hall. We had a guy on Creighton-Durham Hall. His name was Joe Maurer. He's plays for the Minnesota Twins now.
Yeah, he's a pretty good catcher.
Yeah, he's not bad.
Yeah.
And he was one of our guards. We had another couple guys that were really tough that went on to have nice college careers. But our Shep team was a pretty special group. We had a lot of guys that went on from there to do some pretty special things. Two of our guys won a national championship with the Bears. Jermaine Buckner went on to have a great career and played for the national team. Joel Allen was, I think, the leading scorer in the ACAC when he moved on to college. And we had a bunch of other guys that played collegiately as well. So we were really fortunate to have a great group.
What's Jermaine doing now?
He is playing professionally in Belgium, or he was. He just finished up his season. And, he's still going strong. He still looks great.
Yeah, he was a heck of a ball player.
Yeah, he is. He's awesome.
So here you are. You're 33 years of age. Have you ever seen the movie The Rookie?
You know, it's funny you bring that up, actually. We had a practice down there, and their media guy came up to me and asked me the same question. Have you ever seen the movie The Rookie? I said, yeah, I'd seen it years back. And he said, well, we're going to do a sequel. And we're gonna get Tom Berenger to star as you. And I was like, well, that's awful flattering. See if you can get him or Dennis Quaid. So yeah, we'll try for that.
Well, and the reason it's obviously very different. But you know, he was a guy. Now you didn't have three kids when you went to the summer league tryouts like he did, right? In the movie, which was actually a true story.
Sure.
And you know, he was a very specialist. You know, a relief pitcher coming out of the bullpen, a lefty who threw some heat, and he'd been a coach. You'd been playing pro ball, but the reason I saw the correlation was, I look at the NBA game now, and it's so much more about shooting than it's ever been, especially from outside shooting 3 points. And, you know, you go in there, you were a veteran guy. I know you knew one of the coaches, I think, had coached you before, and that's where the connection was. And they wanted to come in as a veteran guy and told you, hey, you weren't going to play a ton.
Mm-hmm.
But you did get in, and when you got in, you showed that, hey, give me a chance, I can shoot the three. And that's what you did. Do you think the NBA, the way the three-point has evolved, that we're going to see specialists on a team's bench who, you know, maybe the 10th, 11th, 12th guy are guys who are excellent three-point shooters?
Absolutely. And I think you can kind of start to see it now. You will have guys that are on rosters based on the idea that they're going to come in and, like you said, be able to fill a specialty role if they're going and they're hot. You kind of ride it. If not, maybe you try something else. But just based on my experience down there, we were down 12. I came in and hit two threes. One of our other guys hit a three, and all of a sudden we're down three, and we played for 40 seconds. So it can swing that quickly in the NBA. So you will have a guy, like if you're using me as the example, if I can come in and make two or three shots, and all of a sudden the momentum of the game entirely shifts, great, then pull me back out. You might throw your guys back in there, and maybe you have a chance to finish the game out and grab a win. It'll be interesting to see how it goes in the next couple of years with the NBA because, like you said, the three-point shot is so popular right now. When I went down there, our first practice, the coach said, like, these are the shot we want. Layups, free throws, and threes. And then the last one was your shot. So whatever your shot is, you take it. But those are the four shots we want. Layups, free throws, threes, and your shot. So it's none of the like in-between stuff that they're really looking for. If that's what you do, great. But we want them pretty much in that order. If you're attacking the rim, we'll get free throws. If you're attacking the rim, we'll get kickouts for shots. And then if you're attacking the rim, you're probably going to have to shoot your shot anyway. So it's an interesting strategy. I like how they worded it. And you could see just at the summer league, those were the shots guys were taking. Dunks, layups, free throws, threes.
Steve Sir joins us fresh off of NBA Summer League with the Milwaukee Bucks. Who were some of the players that you saw in that tournament in Vegas that you think, you know, are going to be names that fans should be watching for in the NBA this year?
You know, I think a lot of people had their eyes on the number one and number two. I mean, Ben Simmons is really good. When you see him physically, like he walks in the gym, you're like, he's really big. He moves really well. I mean, he's 6'9", and he's handling the ball all the time, and he's long. The thing that stood out about him is his shot is really suspect, and teams were daring him to shoot.
Okay.
But his passing was so good for how long. I mean, he's still a young guy. So if you put him around, I think, again, like specialty guys, veterans who have been in the NBA, his ability to pass and find guys with the rules and how you have to help to stop penetration, I think that's really going to be something that's going to be impressive coming up in the NBA.
Okay.
And then Ingram for the Lakers is pretty special. Like he's really lanky. He really looks a lot like Kevin Durant when he first came in the NBA. But he does a lot of things well. He's really, really smooth. He has a really good feel for the game. He gets other guys involved. He can shoot it. And he kind of has like a – I don't know. There's other ways to call it, but it's kind of like a sticky game. Like he just can kind of get into spots and shake guys loose and get his shot if he's so long that it's hard to bother him when he shoots. And then the other guy I would say is the guy that was with us was Thon Maker. Like I really think Thon, he's young, he's raw in certain ways, but he's got a great attitude. He works really hard. He was the second leading rebounder in the summer league. I think a lot of people are putting a lot of pressure on him right now because he's young. Well, he's skinny and, you know, people are second-guessing his age. But if you meet him, he's a really nice guy, and he's trying to do everything that the Bucks are asking him to do the best that he possibly can. So you want to see a guy like that succeed.
Steve Sir joins us. You go to the Summer League, and you're 33. You're a rookie. But they're like, well, we want you to come in as the veteran presence, even though it was your first time there. And I'm assuming, like, when you put that jersey on the first time and it says NBA on it, what did that mean to you?
It was pretty special. Like from the beginning when I got there, it was really surreal because, you know, you go and you're trying to approach it like, oh, this is basketball. I'm just going here to play basketball. But you're lying if you're saying like you're not. Yeah, but it's basketball in the NBA. So it's something very different because, I mean, if you're a fan of any sport, you're always going to look to the highest level of it and you're going to watch that as a kid. And, I mean, if you're a basketball guy, you grew up loving the NBA. And being able to, you know, you put your jersey on, you see the little emblem, the Jerry West logo right on your chest, you think like, man, that's tough to beat because everyone who plays basketball in any corner of the world wants to be there. And from that end of it, it was really special because I took a very different road to have an opportunity to go to the Summer League.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys you can tell when they're down there, like, this is just what's supposed to happen. I'm a superstar in college. I've been great forever. I'm supposed to be here. So this is what's supposed to happen. For me, I was lucky to get a call from the Bucks. And when they asked, do you want to do this, I set the world record for answering yes. So, like, when I got there, it was a thrill to put it on. And it never dissipated. Like, even our last game, you're like, man, I don't want this to be done because this is just too much fun. You get to go out there and play for the Milwaukee Bucks. Like, that's tough to beat.
I want to get more into that. We've got to take a break, but I want to come back and just talk a little bit about chasing the dream, what it meant, and how the games evolved, and really just the improvement of Canadian hoops overall from when you were coming out of high school to now. Mm-hmm. Like, we're seeing Canadians go number one overall almost with regularity in the NBA. And, you know, Murray, another top kid this year, so we'll get to that and more. Steve Sir, fresh off a stint in the NBA Summer League with the Milwaukee Bucks, took his high schooling at Ross Shep, of course. He'll continue on next. Steve, I appreciate you sticking around. So I want to get into that experience. And you're 6'5".
Yep.
Right? So are you small at the Summer League?
Yeah. Like, it's one of the first things that stands out is, like, I'm 6'5", 6'6", according to the NBA roster. Everyone's a little bit taller than they actually are.
Okay. Oh,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's guys that are 6'10", and they're not.
Okay.
But you show up there, and the thing that stands out is the size of the players, the athleticism of the players, how quickly they move, how quickly they recover, how quick their second jump is, how fast they are in transition to change direction. It's something that you try and describe to people, but they never totally grasp because they haven't been on the floor with it. And that's not to make it sound like an elitist thing. It's just very much you don't know until you've experienced it. Like, you don't know if, using like a hockey analogy, you don't know what it's like until you get out there and you actually start moving with these guys, how physical they are, how quick they are. It's the same thing with the basketball. Like, on TV, okay, wow, they jump high, wow, this and that. But you don't know until you've been hit by a screen. You don't know until you've been, like, isolated on the wing and they're trying to go one-on-one. And you definitely don't know if they're coming in transition and you have backpedaling and a guy's coming full steam ahead at you. You don't know how quick that is, and you see some guys fall down. You get in the game and you understand why. They're changing directions so fast and so strong. And you just, you watch it and you're like, that looks tough, but I think I could get out there and do it. Good luck, man. Like, it's a totally different world.
So for you, you know, you played pro in Europe for a long time. How much different was this? Just speed, athleticism, everything. How different?
Again, it was, the athleticism was much different. The speed of the game in certain ways is similar. Because, again, in Europe, you're still having professional players that know how to read the game, react, and know how to play at a different speed. With the NBA, I think you're starting to introduce a level of quickness that is specific to their league. So in Europe, you'll maybe see like a couple guys that are like that. But to have 10 guys in one gym on every team that move that way is unique. Because, again, like in Europe, you're going to have import rules. So you're going to have, I don't know, four or five Americans that are super athletic. And maybe a local or two that's athletic. But the game's a little bit slower because you don't have that level of athlete from 1 to 12. Whereas you go down there with the Bucks, and every one of those guys was a good athlete. And then you look on every team, and every one of them is a good athlete. So once you get in there, you have to just be expecting, I got to move. So like if the ball's being passed, I have to move on the pass. If I'm moving on the catch, I'm done. They're going to make a shot, or they're going to blow right past me. So when like a lot of coaches talk about if the ball gets skipped and the ball's in the air, if you're moving after that player gets the ball, it's done. And they'll tell you that down there too. The shot's gone, or the guy's going to the rim and dunking on you. Like if you're not ball anticipating, ball leaves the guy's hands and sprinting, you got no chance. Because with the level of athlete, it's one dribble from the free throw line, they're at the rim. And then you just got to hope like hell there's a big guy behind you who can foul him and then look at you and say like, help me out, man. But it's so very unique. So because the size, the speed, the athleticism is – you just don't see it every day.
Now, it was five games that you got to play in, and there was one game for sure that stuck out, and probably I think it was like 30 seconds, and the Bucks made a GIF, and you joked about it. You're like, I didn't even know what a GIF was.
Yeah.
So they put a GIF out on social media, and here it's you draining two threes back-to-back in a short period of time, and the crowd is chanting your name.
Yeah.
Had that ever happened before?
You know, you have that a couple times, like in Europe, they like to do that a little bit, where you get going and they'll start to chant something. It hadn't happened like that, because like I've never had that happen in North America. It got started quick because when I went into the game seemed like it was out of reach, so it was almost like charity minutes.
Yeah.
And everybody loves the yes sir and things like that stuff. They get a kick out of the last name.
Okay. Yeah.
So
yeah.
They hopped on that quick. The best thing that happened, though, is when I got into the game, the Rockets got a technical. So I got to go right to the free throw line and shoot a free throw. So you kind of get a chance to get a feel for the ball, get a shot with no pressure, and then that went in and you feel good. And then right after that, I got a three in transition, and then I got another three in the corner. So it kind of just built on itself. Once I hit my first shot, I think people were pumped, and then I hit my second shot, and it started to get pretty lively. The gym was dead through the game because, like, the Rockets just kind of were putting it on us after a while, and people were getting pretty disinterested. So it was kind of fun also, too, just from a standpoint of the gym started to liven up. And plus, we were in the game. Like, I hit a couple shots, and our point guard hit a three, and we were down three all of a sudden. And when I went in, I think it was a 12- or 13-point game. So, again, like, that swing in the NBA, it makes it exciting. You hit three shots, and it's all of a sudden a game in 30 seconds. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, it couldn't have been a cooler way to end it.
So they start chanting, and you're backpedaling on the second three. What's going through your mind then? Are you hearing the noise?
Yeah, you do. And I'm thinking, like, just try not to smile. Like, don't try and look like you've done this before. And, you know, like, basketball is basketball, and you go down there knowing that when you get a shot, you take it, and you've done it so many times, you just, you know, you hit it. But there's something about being able to say, like, you know, you hit a shot, your first shot with an NBA team, and then for some reason the crowd's really into it too. My kids were in the stands. My wife was in the stands, like my mom and my dad. And there was actually some kids from Edmonton too on a traveling team that were there.
Oh, wow.
So it was kind of a special little thing.
Oh, for sure, I would think.
Yeah. And, I mean, the reason, like, going down there was great because – again, an opportunity to do anything with an NBA team is a very fortunate thing to come by. But I also went down there wanting to show, like, I can play. And that was one of the things that felt best about this experience was in practice I played well. And I showed I can play with these guys. So when I got into the game, I felt, you know, I hadn't been getting many minutes in the previous games. That's okay because that was my job for those games. If I get called on today, I want to make an impression. I want to do something that leaves a mark. Fortunately enough, I got a chance. And then also, too, you get the ball in this couple spots that you can do something, and it went well.
You look at your basketball journey, and regardless of what happens moving forward, for that short time, does it make everything worthwhile?
I think so, because, you know, I've had this talk with one of my brothers, with my wife a bunch of times, and a couple friends of mine who play basketball in Europe as well. It does, but...
Does it make even hungrier?
Very much so. Yeah. Like, I feel really rejuvenated, and, like, this was... I mean, everybody grows up with a dream of playing in the NBA. You don't lose sight of it as much as it just you start to realize, like, that's really tough. It's 1% of the 1%. And with that, you find other ways to play basketball and make a living and experience new challenges. But then to get this shot, you think, like, you know what? I went down there, and I actually did well. And all the work I've been putting in did prepare me for that moment. And then you start to hear from guys, like, one of the first things I heard after the game from an NBA veteran was, like, you know what, you can do that for an NBA team. You need to try and find a way into the NBA because teams need that. A guy that comes in, stays professional, hits a couple shots, changes the momentum of the game, and then comes out. That can be your job. And he said that to me, and I was just like, are you being serious? And he's like, yeah, I'm being serious. That's what the NBA is about, is guys having specialty roles. The NBA becomes this, at times, this, like, far-off universe that you feel like you can watch but never touch. So for me, like, it's almost surreal to think, like, well, maybe I do have a chance to actually crack something here. And basketball hasn't been easy. I mean, playing in Europe is not easy. You know, you go over there and deal with some weird stuff, weird people. You stress about finding jobs. I mean, the market over there is tough because the economy is even tougher. So, you know, it's not like the journey at this point has been easy, but you stick with it because that's the only choice you have in certain areas. So, yeah, when you get a moment like this, you definitely savor it because you know how sometimes hard it can be to come by.
Steve Sir joins us live and on the rocks, fresh off the Summer League with the NBA Milwaukee Bucks. What was the exit meeting with the Bucks like?
You know, I had a chance to talk with their coach, who was actually a friend of mine. He played with me at Crete and Durham Hall when I moved down to St. Paul.
Their head coach?
One of their assistants.
Okay.
He's the head coach for the Summer League team because they feel.
Who's that?
His name's Sean Sweeney, and he's the defensive guy for the Bucks. And they feel in the Bucks that he's going to be an NBA head guy very soon. So they want him to use his Summer League experience as a way to get used to running a team. We talked for a few hours after our last game, and Sean and I haven't spoken in 10 years, but we've always been two guys that think very much alike. The way I left it with him was, the job that they gave me to come down, I did exactly what they wanted. They told me I should have probably played more. What I hope is that they gave me a small window, but I'll take a small window over none.
Yeah.
Is to try and find a way into their training camp. If I can find a way to do the job I did with the Summer League team with their main roster, then I'd jump at that in a heartbeat. Because then you never know what can happen.
So is that the agent now that's just constantly kind of knocking on the door, or do you take it on yourself to, you know, be contacting the Bucks every week? How does it work?
I'm going to try and take a lot of it on myself. I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't say my past relationship with Sean wasn't one of the things that played into me getting down there.
Yeah.
Ultimately, what happened was Sean wanted an older player on his team that would be a good influence on the end of the bench. And again, be someone that when called upon could come and make shots. Because as he said, for him, when he gets his head coach job, the end of the bench is very important. He can't have guys down there complaining. He can't have guys down there creating bad culture. So what he did was he went to Jason Kidd and he told Kidd, like, this is what I want on my Summer League roster. Are you good with that? And Kidd said, absolutely. I like Steve. And then he went to management and said, we need Steve. I'm kind of hoping we can maybe try and find a way to do that same thing for training camp. Time will tell. But what you have to do is something that I've learned maybe the hard way, is you have to be your strongest advocate.
Yes.
I mean, in this world, with the NBA where everyone's trying to get into it, be it a coach, be it a trainer, be it a player, be it anybody. If you're not willing to stand up for yourself and say, this is why I belong, then someone else will stand up and say, well, no, this is why I should be there. And you don't have to be arrogant about it. You don't have to be cocky, but you have to be strong and stand your ground and say, I deserve this shot. And if you give it to me, I won't let you down.
Fresh off of his NBA Summer League audition with the Milwaukee Bucks, and now going to be out there selling himself, because if you don't believe in yourself, no one else will. And it's a great philosophy, Steve. I love that you said that, because you have to be your strongest advocate, and you have to be dogged without being annoying, but at the same time confident. And the fact that you made some shots, you know, I'm sure there's your tape. It's pretty easy. Here's the gift from the Milwaukee Bucks to show, you know, I could do it if given the opportunity.
Yeah, we actually had, like, the whole entire experience down there was great. We had one day where we went and did a Players Association meeting, and they had some ex-players come in and talk about how do you maximize your opportunity, what do you do to improve your chances to make the NBA, and then once you're in the NBA, what do you have to do, and better yet, what do you have to watch out for? They had a couple guys come in who lost a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
A couple guys who, I mean, you know, those stories have been out there, but the funny thing is, we were doing four-team breakdowns, so it was us, the Pelicans, the Rockets, and the Raptors. The majority of the guys that were in there, not to make it negative, they just weren't listening. Because, again, it was very cliched stuff, and we've heard this before, and, you know, we don't want to be here. And then one guy got up and talked. He's actually the ex-coach of the Raptors, Butch Carter.
Oh, yes.
And he was 5-10 minutes into his talk, and no one was saying a word. Everyone was just sitting there watching him, because he just grabbed everyone's attention like that. And one of the things he said is, one, you got to be organized. So you got to figure out, like, if you don't know the plays, never complain about playing time. And I'm not talking about know the play from your position. I'm talking every position. If you don't know it, never talk about playing time. If you're not working on your game, never talk about playing time. If you're giving all your money to a trainer who's separate from the team and telling you this is what you need to get better at, but you're not trying to improve your role on the team, never talk about playing time. So the last thing, one of the last things he said that I thought was interesting, he was just like, you know, guys, all the stuff you've done up to this point is great, but you're entering a league where we need selfish guys. We need guys who are going to play for themselves, because that helps us, that helps you, that helps other guys on the team. And he said, I want guys that are selfish enough, that love themselves enough, that they want to make a team, that they want to kick a veteran's ass, that they want to prove a point, and also, too, that they want to provide for their family. So he said, like, who's going to be that aggressive? Who's going to be that alpha? And, you know, some guys, that sounds great. It's another thing when you step into a gym and you start to get divided into the pecking order. But what you took from that was, like, you're entering into a world that is so competitive and is so sought after by outsiders and so held onto by the people that are in there. You don't want to leave the NBA.
Oh, goodness.
Like, it's not like you're saying, let me leave the NBA and go play in the CBA for a little bit just to test it out. No way. So what I took from it was, like, if I'm the guy who's the older guy who's here on like, you know, the end of his career, not the beginning, where it just you looking at this horizon of, well, I'm going to play in the NBA for 15 years and then who knows what. If I could sneak in there because I'm being a strong advocate for myself, why leave it up to chance? Like, why leave it up to, well, I don't want to bug anybody or tick anybody off. If I tick somebody off because I want to try and promote the idea that, like, I can help your team and here's why, then I'm sorry, but, you know, that's the risk I guess you have to take.
Steve Sirk joins us. Did you have that mentality before? Were you one who was, when you look back at, and you've kind of had to, you know, scratch and claw. I know it's tough in Europe to, you kind of got to sell yourself, and Romania and places, it's maybe a little bit different. So are you used to it, or would this be even a different level?
It's a different level. There are times when I have it, kind of depends on how confident you're feeling. And then there are other times when I feel like, geez, I don't know if that suits me or if that suits my personality. I mean, if there is one thing that stands out about Western Canadian players that I know is that they are very polite and they are very respectful. We're not going to do the what can you do for me and how much can I take from you. But you start to learn, and when you're older, like, boy, if you're not going to get in the room and say, I belong here, and you know what, I deserve maybe even more, because I put in the time, I put in the work, I do the right things, I don't get in trouble, then someone else is gonna be that guy. And it's not an easy lesson to teach to people, but again, if it comes from a place of substance, like Coach Carter was talking about in the talk, if you know the plays, then you deserve to be on the floor. If you've done the work, you deserve to be on the floor. If you haven't done those things, then okay, that's up for debate. But for me, like, one of the things that stood out to me, which I was most proud about when I left the summer league, was I work like an NBA player, and that's what my coaches told me. I'm there early. I got to sweat before practice. I stay late. I get other guys to stay with me. If we got 10 minutes, I'm asking the manager, let's get 10 good minutes. Like, guys, the coaches are yelling, let's get on the bus. I need to go home. I want to go back to the hotel so I can play a round of golf. I mean, we're staying at the Wynn, so they got a golf course right there, and the coaches want to get on it. But for me, like, if we got 10 minutes in between when we're on the floor and when the Sacramento Kings are on the floor. So if I got 10 minutes, I'm grabbing two managers, and we're going to do 10 minutes of work. And what felt great about that is myself, Jermaine Buckner, we've done that for years, and we love doing that. But then you get to the NBA and you realize, like, man, that's cool to know we've been working at the level that you should be to keep a spot in the best league in the world.
Steve Sir, join us. So you're down there. How long were you there? Is it 3 weeks overall total?
Two weeks. Yeah.
Was there one wow moment for you, like outside of the game and making the three shots?
There was a couple. One time in practice, someone took a shot, and a guy was just going to go up and grab it casually. And all of a sudden, Thon Maker was running in transition on offense, was late to the play, and he jumped. It looked like he jumped from, like, the three-point line, but I'm sure it was much closer than that. But he jumped, caught the ball in midair, and he just, like, his arm was over the rim, and he just kind of came down on the rim and dunked it. And everyone in the gym just kind of went quiet, and the drill kind of just stopped for a second. And everyone's like, well, what do we do now? And the coach was like, well, keep playing. You know, keep going. But everyone, even coaches, everybody was like, wow, that was impressive for whoever it was. But it was, I mean, for Thon, it was a great, like, oh, he's going to be good moment.
Just pay attention over
here. Yeah, yeah. Everybody, someone missed their box out. So, like, that was kind of what everyone was looking at. There was a couple moments just where you get kind of caught up where you were. Like, when we played the Mavericks, Mark Cuban was courtside. And, I mean, this is a guy you see all the time. And you kind of realize, like, man, this really is, in a way, the show. And then you're leaving outside in the parking lot, and Floyd Mayweather was at a game. And it's just the circus that follows it. And, again, like, basketball is basketball. But the NBA has this thing where it just attracts stars from every area of life. And you start to get exposed. You just were exposed to this type of stuff that's like, man, you just don't see this stuff every day. Where the best in their industries always love to come and watch basketball. And they like to be around basketball and like to be around basketball players. So when, you know, the Bulls are playing the Timberwolves in the final of a summer league game, you got 10,000 people there. Like, that's – it was just cool to see, like, the spectacle of it. It's in Vegas where everything is a spectacle. And – it's hard not to at times not get swept up in it, but just take a step back and realize, like, and think, this is incredible. Like, what a world, and what a great opportunity to be a part of it.
Steve Sir joins us now. Quickly, Steve, the crazy thing about that, you had found out in March, you know, they had approached you and said, you know, barring some major surprise at the draft, we're going to bring you down. Mm-hmm. You kept that secret until like a week or two before. Now, your dad, Paul, of course, played in pro for many years.
Yep.
Was he more excited than you, like, when you told him, hey, Pops, I'm going to the NBA Summer League?
He was pretty ecstatic. I think for us, being a basketball family, yeah, we've always played. The game's been a big part of our lives. And I think for all of us, it felt pretty special. The person who was the most excited for me, I felt, was my wife. She's been with me through stuff that was really tough with basketball, with moments that – you want to stop playing. You don't feel like you're moving forward. You feel like you're maybe staying stagnant or moving back. It was a special moment for us because she always encouraged me to keep working hard and to remember my goals and remember our goals. So to have this opportunity and then plus have her down there with our two daughters to share it was a really special moment because, again, you just never know if a moment like that's going to come.
Well, Steve, we're going to follow your story, and hopefully you get into the NBA training camp, and who knows what – because you just got to get your foot in the door, and who knows what happens there. And,
right.
And obviously, if not, you'll be playing in Europe, but we'll definitely keep in touch. Fantastic story. Got hundreds of texts. I couldn't get to many of the day people rooting you on. A lot of your buddies, obviously, who are people who played against you in high school, are obviously people who know you. You're pretty big in the basketball community in Evan. So congrats. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for many people. I don't think they realize how hard it is just to even get to the NBA Summer League, never mind to the NBA. So congrats, and we look forward to following it. Man, it'd be awesome to see you in some preseason games, hopefully even training camp.
Thank you very much, Jason. Thanks for having me.